Today's show is sponsored by Datadog, a scalable, full-stack monitoring platform. Datadog synthetic monitoring enables you to detect front-end errors and performance errors by analyzing user sessions and receiving actionable alerts. API tests help you detect and debug user-facing issues in critical endpoints and applications. Build and deploy self-maintaining browser tests to simulate user journeys from global locations. Start proactively monitoring your user experience today with a free 14-day trial of Datadog by visiting datadog.com/frontend-cloudcast. That's datadog.com/frontend-cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for Cloud News this week. For those that were able to travel to KubeCon, I hope you are recovered. And we're starting to see a lot of the typical post-show analysis start to come out, including what Brian did on Sunday. And it's been a really interesting to see the response and growth of the show. But with that, I'm going to jump into cloud news. So our first article this week, and oh, by the way, go check out the link to cloud news this week, because I'm not even covering probably half of the links. It's actually been a couple weeks of interesting news, and I think that will continue now as we get into cloud earnings and conference season again. But first of all, the folks over at RedMonk, and this is something we've actually talked about on the show a little bit here in the past of around IaaS patterns and trends, because there was once upon a time you saw price cuts. You know, there was lots of price cuts in the industry. And then RedMonk started doing a report of, okay, given, say, an hourly cost, who's offering the most compute, the most disk space, and the most memory? And as we've talked about before, all of this stuff in a typical S-curve, it gets commodity eventually, and we've pretty much reached that status where all of them are kind of sort of equal. The cloud pricing wars are kind of over. And in addition to that, they now have to differentiate themselves because they don't want it to be a race to the bottom. So there's some implications that were listed in the RedMonk article, including fabricating their own chips, which is actually something else we're going to talk about here shortly, as well as expanding the portfolio as much as possible. So you have ARM support, you have GPUs, you have bare metal offerings. And then you know they start to make money elsewhere where it's not just about the lowest cost, but hey, let's make money on egress costs, for instance, or directly connecting to other clouds, offering that service, but making sure they charge a premium for it. The article, extremely well-written, extremely insightful, and I certainly encourage you to go check that out. Number two is something we've talked about backstage. Backstage is something I've been following pretty closely as just kind of a side project these days. And the folks over at Spotify actually put together a Backstage blog that they just published, and it had some really good stats. They talked about, hey, here's what we think we're going to get out of the platform. Now that we have some metrics, let's publish those metrics. So Backstage users at Spotify, 2.3 times more active on GitHub. They can create twice the code in 17% less cycle time, deploy software twice as often, and their software is deployed for three times as long, and employee retention, 5% more likely to be at Spotify 1 year later. So some fantastic results about going faster as well as keeping employees happy and satisfied. A very good read, and that was the first time I've seen some results of an IDP or an internal developer portal really starting to come to fruition. The third one I'm just going to mention briefly here, Battery Ventures did a state of cloud software spending report. I didn't get to read this one super in depth yet, but I just wanted to highlight it as well, that it is certainly over there. And one of the big reports on that is generative AI is certainly getting a lot of investment and a lot of spend. And that results for our fourth article, and this is probably no surprise to anyone, and relates back to all the previous articles. Microsoft is developing its own AI chip, and it kind of, you know, hit the press as a rumor, but Amazon and Google already were developing their own in-house chips as well. And it turns out Microsoft has been working on this. It's codenamed Athena, and it's specifically a ChatGPT and OpenAI specific chip that they're developing and have been developing since 2019. And again, going back to that pattern of IaaS platforms and trying to differentiate and also reduce costs. So bring the chip manufacturing in-house. I thought that was a really fascinating article, very quick article, but not a surprise, like I said, to anyone. So that's going to wrap up Cloud News for this week. And what we're going to do is, coming up after the break, this is actually the first of two shows we have coming out here soon, talking about community. So we're going to be talking to Steve Buchanan, Principal Program Manager at Microsoft and author at Plural Insight. And we're going to be talking about combining Kubernetes community, careers, and personal brands.
Are you getting pressure from finance to justify or reduce your cloud bill? Cloud Zero is the only cloud cost platform loved by engineers and trusted by finance. Cloud Zero can identify unused, idle, or over-provisioned resources, alert you to spend anomalies, and organize 100% of your spend into a framework that mirrors your business structure, like cost per customer, product feature, or team. It's the most powerful platform ever built to provide accurate, granular visibility into your total cloud spend without the typical pitfalls of legacy cloud cost management tools, like endless tagging or clunky Kubernetes support. Manage cost, optimize development, and maximize profit, all in one platform. Join companies like Rapid7, Drift, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast. Visit today to experience immediate and ongoing savings on your cloud bill.
And we're back, and we have a really interesting guest this week. We've been talking a lot throughout the history of this podcast, both about careers and Kubernetes. And we're going to combine them both today. And we're going to talk about careers and Kubernetes. And so we went out and found somebody, like we always do, that's kind of dabbling in both of these areas. And hopefully this is going to be a fascinating conversation for everyone. We have Steve Buchanan, Principal Program Manager at Microsoft and author at Pluralsight. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. I'm excited to be on your show.
Awesome. Fantastic. And tell everyone, just give everyone like a quick introduction, because I believe you just have a super fascinating journey.
Yeah. So I've been in tech for, 23 years now. And I've done a ton of stuff. It's been a really fun ride, and I'm still on that ride, and it's still a lot of fun, a lot of challenges. I started internal IT and then moved into consulting. And now I'm on the product side, so I'm really excited about this shift in my career. And I've done a lot of community stuff. I've been a big proponent of community for a long time. So, I've been a blogger for a long time. I still am. Not sure if that medium is still really, really hot, with things like YouTube, but I'm still a blogger. I've written 8 books. And I'm up to 19 courses on Pluralsight. And just like, I speak at conferences and user groups, and I'm involved with some boards and stuff of conferences and user groups. So I do a ton of stuff in the community, like outside of work as well, in tech, just to share knowledge and help folks with career and whatever, right? So it's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, too, I heard you over on the Kubernetes Unpacked podcast. And so for everyone that's listening, if you're looking for a good Kubernetes podcast, by the way, go give them a subscribe. But first off, like you were saying, like, it really is kind of hard to keep up with all the things you're doing in the community these days. And there's also, too, like I've noticed, Brian and I did a bunch of community stuff over the years. Everyone has a focus at any given time, and then you tend to focus in one area and you might be moving on to another area. So what is your current focus and passion? Kubernetes is the day job, obviously, but tell us a little bit more about all of the other areas you're doing things in.
So this might sound cliche, but it's Kubernetes. And what I, because there's so many facets to it, right? And it's complex, and like there's all these add-ons and other products and stuff. And so like the core of Kubernetes is more of the day-to-day job, but like I like to explore some of these add-ons and additional tools and understand how, you know, new products, whether they're open source or closed source, are expanding the Kubernetes ecosystem, right? And so things like Crossplane, of course, GitOps, and just like there's so many different things. So I like to explore those things. And then also something else that's in focus is my background has been on the infrastructure side throughout my career. And I've always dabbled in automation. I think most of us have. And I've always dabbled in web stuff. I've had contracts on like web development stuff and whatnot throughout the years. But I haven't ever been a peer like software engineer or developer or whatever you want to call it. And so I've been diving deeper into that world, not necessarily to become a developer myself, but just to understand it better. And one of the things I did when I was shifting over to like Kubernetes and cloud was really dove deep into DevOps, right? So understanding like CI/CD and the tooling there and like, you know, application performance monitoring and all the kind of stuff that comes along with DevOps, right? But I didn't go and start writing applications. And so now I'm taking the reverse and like building out applications, just like little applications, and diving deeper into like heads down in code, not on the automation side, but like, let me go build something. And so it's just expanding that. And something I always work on continuously is business acumen, right? And so both the soft skill side and just like leadership and just like business in general. So I have a vast pool of knowledge around business itself. And I don't talk about that as much, but I think that's just as important as knowing the tech. And sometimes, well, many times, that business knowledge will help propel your career in ways that being solely a tech-focused person won't be able to do for you, right? It's like, you know, tapping into my consulting experience, it's great to know the tech, but if you can't go have a conversation with the CIO or directors or VPs or whoever, how are you going to sell the projects, right? How are you going to get the chance to go work on the cool stuff that you want to work on because you're a gearhead? And so combining those two things is I don't know. That's in focus. That's a lot of stuff. So maybe I could summarize that. So in focus is Kubernetes. I sort of have things that orbit around that being, you know, add-ons and extensions of it. Building software, because I want to build software, containerize it, and of course run it on Kubernetes. So it all ties together. And then the business acumen and soft skills. All of those things are in focus for me.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit more about both balance and benefits for a second then, if I use that term, right? Like, because everyone, we always talk about work-life balance, right? And especially during COVID, I think there was a lot of talk about it. And then there was like a lot of talk of, oh, it shifted really hard one way. Then it shifted hard the other way. And, you know, we're kind of coming back to the pendulum swinging back to, you know, I won't say in the middle, but, you know, swinging back from one extreme to the other. But we've always in our careers balanced a certain time of the day job for you, you know, program manager at AKS, and nights and weekends when you're doing Plural site courses, you're blogging, you're writing books and doing all of these other things. First of all, yeah, it's a two-part question. One, how do you balance that other than complete lack of sleep? And two, what are some of the benefits you see to this approach? Obviously, is this an additional community thing, or is there other benefits that you see that you continue to do this?
Yeah, so I'll tackle, I guess, the first part of that. So balance of time and balance of energy. It's really tough. I'm not gonna sit here and tell folks that it's easy. It's not. But what I will say is, if you have goals that you want to meet, you know, you'll make time for what's important. And so, you know, I have a family too, and I have a wife, and I have sons, and so, you know, I make time for them because it's important. So many times I'll drop whatever I'm doing on the side, like if I'm doing a course or a blog or something like that, because I got to take my son to chess club or, you know, some kind of sport, or go to my teenager's you know, track meet or something like that. Those things come first. I try to be smart, right, and be strategic. So like an example is, many years ago, the Microsoft MVP summit was coming up, and then it also was my anniversary, right, with my wife. And it's like, I want to do both. They're both really important. So how can I tackle this? So what it boiled down to was like, I'm going to fly my wife out and we're going to spend our anniversary in Seattle. So I'm going to take some time away from the summit and we're going to go hang out, have a great dinner and go see the city and do stuff. And it worked out really, really well. And at the same time, like, I was still able to spend time in Redmond with the product groups, with other MVPs, you know, all these friends that I've made over the years. And so it was just really, you know, kind of taking those two things, which could be a massive conflict, and like looking at the problem from a different way and figuring out like, how can both of these important things like be done? Sleep is always a challenge. I wish there were more hours in the day. And there's just, you know, yeah, I stay up late, and not all the time, but, you know, to do the things that I want to do, sometimes you gotta do that. And sometimes you gotta take a break, right? You just like drop everything, and it's like, I'm not doing anything for the next like 2 weeks, and I'm just gonna go to sleep early. I'm gonna relax. I'm gonna step away from the computer or whatever I'm doing. And you have to balance those things, right? If you have deadlines and stuff like that, that's important. But like, when I've written books in the past, or even when I'm doing a course and I'm building out the content, like if I hit writer's block, it's like, okay, it is time to step away for 3 days or 2 days. And I try to build enough leeway in my deadlines so that I can do that if I need to do that, right? If I need to take 3 days away, I'm still able to hit my deadline. Also, I will say, I try to do things that are passionate. So like with the blogging in the past, I used to be more consistent. Now I still blog, but when I blog, it's like something I really want to explore. And so I don't see it as a time suck. I see it as like, oh man, there's this really cool feature of whatever, and I want to dive in and like rip that thing apart and understand it front and backwards, and blog about my experience. And so it doesn't become a chore. It becomes like something fun to do. So like for folks that like to, I don't know, build things out of Legos or tinker with cars or whatever, it's kind of like that. It becomes a hobby at that point. And so, you know, spending 3 hours on something feels like 20 minutes. It doesn't feel like 3 hours, right? But on the flip side of that, if someone comes to me and they're like, hey, we want you to do this thing or build this content around this thing, and you know, the money's good, so maybe I'll take it on, but not as passionate about it, it's a lot harder to kind of get through some of that, right? And so when I'm doing Pluralsight courses or when I'm doing a book, which not planning to write more books, but when I'm doing any of that, I try to pick something that I'm passionate about. Like with the courses, you know, I'd say 90% of the courses that I've done have been on things that I'm passionate about. And even some of the courses, which there's not many where it's like, I don't know, but I'll go ahead and take this on. Once I get into it, it's super interesting. So then it's just like you get lost in it and it's not a chore.
Yeah. And I would add this too. Like I found this in doing kind of research for the questions for the show. It was interesting to see. I was surprised by the variety, you know, you having 19 courses on Pluralsight. They're not 19 Kubernetes courses, which is maybe what I expected. I mean, then again, you know, how many courses can you do on Kubernetes? But I did not expect the variety of topics that you did have out there. And then quick side note as well, I will say this, and don't get me wrong, it was a good catch. You caught a spelling mistake on the show notes last night, and you sent me the comment on it, and I think it was like after midnight your time. So just to show everyone like a little bit of what's, you know, the behind the scenes of all of this. So let me kind of take that even one step further and let's kind of turn this into maybe some actionable advice for everyone that is maybe they're doing it somewhere today and they want to do more, or maybe they want to take that first step. I think your journey kind of parallels our journey here. We started the podcast to learn, because we're two guys in North Carolina, and you know, we're not in Silicon Valley, right? And we wanted to learn, but we also wanted to give back to the community. And prior to the podcast, like blogging was absolutely a big thing. And you know, we might be aging ourselves now when you both of us are talking about blogging, but you also mentioned you authored 8 books, and I know folks that have written 1 book. I don't know many folks that have gone through the grind of 8, first of all. and I don't, so tell us, like, okay, if you're entering community or wanting to do more in community today, where do you suggest folks get started on their journey today? Like, where's the most bang for your buck today?
Yeah. So some really good conversational pieces there. And I'll try to run through that list. So I want to touch on the 8 books first, right? So 8 books sounds like a lot, but if you look into it deeper, that's 8 books over 12-year, 13-year period, or maybe a little less. So it's not like that was overnight. That was years of putting in the work. The other thing too is like, actually, 2 of those books were completely by myself. But after my first book, I was like, I'm never doing that again by myself. And so every book that I've done, I've picked up co-authors. Every book ever since the first book, I've picked up co-authors, or I've joined teams where I've co-authored and I've been the lead author on majority of those books. But that makes it a lot easier to consume, right? You go in and you do 5 chapters instead of 13 chapters. And then you split up the 13 chapters. It makes it easier to kind of take those things in chunks, and do that work. And you still land on the cover, right? Your name still lands on the cover. So, you know, so for anyone that's looking at, you know, wow, 8 books, I can never reach that. No, you absolutely can. And a good friend of mine, Sam Ernskine, this guy's, he's insane. I think he did like 6 books in like 2 years. Wow. So
yeah.
I was like, when do you sleep? but you know, he was passionate about what he was doing and really just knocked it out. And it really did wonders for his career and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, and I'll add this real quick and then you can keep going on that. There was one, I've known multiple authors, but there's one author that stands out in particular, Scott Lowe, who is super big in the VMware and virtualization community. We worked together at a national reseller, and we both were here in North Carolina, and we had sales kickoff. And so we were all flown down to Florida, and like we were all SEs at the time, and we're working for the company, and we do all the day stuff, and we're doing learning and certifications and all these other things that goes with sales kickoff. And then it was like time to go to bed. And he's like, all right, cool. I'm going to go down to the lobby. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I got to knock out another chapter tonight. Cause he was in the middle of writing like the Mastering vSphere book at the time. Mm. And it was like every single night was like, basically stayed up to like 3 or 4 in the morning, writing chapters.
I don't do that. So I try to,
and I do not recommend anyone else does it, by the way. If that's your idea to get involved in the community, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Yeah. So I do try to limit like when I go to sleep, and I try to target like maybe like 1 or 1:30 at the latest. If I'm up beyond that, like that's tough. And like I get up with my son every morning at 6:30 to get him on the school bus. So I do have to limit how late I'm working. But like on the weekend, if I don't have anything going on, I might stay up later. Right. Or, I can just like do more. As far as like the variety of stuff I've done, it's really a representation of my career as a whole. So I've mostly done Microsoft technologies, but I've always baked in open source throughout my career. Even when I was going to college, I took Linux courses, and I always gravitated towards that open source because I knew there was something special and important about open source and just the way it is and the vibe of open source. So it's really good to see Microsoft making that shift to embracing open source. But throughout my career, I've had to roll up my sleeves and just kind of do what needed to be done, especially when, being internal IT, like a generalist, I was doing CRM, I was doing web stuff, I was doing networking, like hardcore firewall stuff, wireless, automation. I had to work with dev teams. Like there's all this stuff, right? And so in the consulting world, it was a little bit like that too, but I did specialize more in System Center and then Azure and then Kubernetes. So a little less of that generalist. But again, when you're doing System Center, you got to roll up your sleeves and like do a bunch of different stuff. When you're monitoring stuff, you might have to monitor an application. So you got to dig in and understand that app, right? And so when it came time to doing courses, a little bit of it was like some of the people I worked with early on at Pluralsight didn't understand my skill set or what I was known for in the community. And so it's like, well, I want to author courses. So, they kind of gave me what they had. And I rolled up my sleeves and knocked it out. Some of it is like the Kubernetes courses were already all done. And so I couldn't go into Pluralsight and start doing Kubernetes courses. I'd love to have a whole catalog full of K8s courses, right? Because they do really well. So what I did was like, what else could I author on for Pluralsight that's related to Kubernetes? Oh, GitOps. Oh, Argo CD. Oh, Azure Arc enable Kubernetes, and then other stuff as well, like general cloud stuff. Right now I'm doing JavaScript courses. And there's just a variety of things. And that goes back to my skill set. I did a WordPress course. I've worked with WordPress for years. From a hosting, from development, from running my own blog on it. And so when I found out Pluralsight needed a WordPress course, it's like, absolutely, I can knock that out. I'm doing a Drupal course right now. Same thing. I've done a lot of Drupal work throughout the years. Not related to Kubernetes, but something I could tackle, right? And so that's why you see that variety, is because I have a variety in my skill set, and I have the ability to also learn quickly. And I think that's one of the most important skills that anyone in tech needs to have, right? I can go into a job, a new role, and learn quickly, whether it's internal IT, consulting, or even what I'm doing now. and I'm able to apply that in many different areas. I don't remember the last point. You had like a few conversation points.
Well,
but
so here, maybe. Probably the biggest thing is like, hey, what's the actionable things folks can do? And I think if I kind of summarize all of it is find something you're passionate about. Because yeah, this is a lot of times we all have day jobs and this is nights and weekends. So you don't want it to be a slog. If it's, you know, not fun, you're not going to do it. So number one, find something that you want to spend the extra time. And, you know, everything's an opportunity cost that you want to spend the time on this versus something else, right? And then I think it's find a medium, right? Like there is blogging. Yes, there's courses. Yes, there's a million things to get involved and to share. But I think one of the core, it's less about the platform you use to share and more about giving back to the community is definitely a way to keep the ball rolling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, spot on. And so, okay, I know how to answer that. So as far as a medium, you know, I would say analyze what's hot. Right. So we can look right now, like TikTok is big. Not sure what's going to happen with it in the US, but it's big right now. Maybe that's not your thing, though. YouTube is also hot and you can do full YouTube videos or you could do short YouTube shorts. But again, maybe that's not your thing. Like, I don't have any interest in starting a YouTube channel because I don't want to have to produce at the rate that folks are doing YouTube have to produce. I know that would burn me out. I know myself from that aspect. And so I'm staying away from YouTube, at least for now. Blogging is still a thing and people still consume blogs. Like when I put out a certain blogs, like some of the topics are really hot and it helps a lot of folks. I'll get messages from folks like, hey, really loved your blog. It really helped me. Podcasting. And also I would say, look for those odd areas where you can contribute. And this goes back to my story of becoming an MVP. One of the things I did after writing my first book was like, I was able to team up with a friend in Russia and a friend, in Canada and a guy in Ireland. And we put together an architecture poster for a Microsoft product. Now, Microsoft didn't put out an architecture poster for this product. Not sure why, but there were architecture posters for other products. Now, you would think like, you know, most of the MVPs and people in the community, they're like speaking, they're writing books, they're blogging, they're doing all these things. No one's building architecture posters. We saw a gap and we were like, Microsoft's not filling that gap. Let's fill it. Because we knew that we would have loved to have an architecture poster when we started working with that product, right? So we're like, let's just build it and put it out there. Let people, you know, for folks to have. Maybe it'll help someone. And we did that. And as soon as we did that, like it caught wildfire. Folks at Microsoft caught wind of it and put it on TechNet and everything. And next thing you know, like all these different blogs were mentioning it. And it was just like, it caught on, right? It went viral for a tech thing, right? not like the viral stuff you see in the mainstream. But so the reason I bring that story up is because you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. In fact, if you do something that has high impact and high value, you never know where that might take off and who it's going to help. And that's going to help you stick out. So if you produce one of those and the next person is producing 10 of the other kinds of widgets that everyone else is doing, your thing might stand out. And so, you know, keep an open mind when you're looking at the different mediums that you can use to contribute back to this tech ecosystem and this giant knowledge share. and just keep an open mind when you're looking at that. And also to the last part of your question there and your point, yes, try to find something you're passionate about when you're doing stuff for the community or outside of work. And if you can, try to relate that back to work. So I started doing Kubernetes probably 2 to 2.5 years before I started doing it at work. In fact, one of my past employers, you know, I went to the leadership. I'm like, we got to get on this Kubernetes thing. Like, it's not just a buzzword. Like, companies are adopting. This thing is taking off, right? We need to be there. We're in the consulting world. And their response was like, customers are not buying that right now. And so the leadership at the time didn't have the foresight. So you know what my approach was? I went and did it anyway. I spent my own time on it. And in fact, when Microsoft had the Microsoft Professional Program, I dropped $1,500 or whatever the cost was, may have been $1,200 to go through the program, which taught me a ton of things about DevOps, and it was really good education. And it started to get me into that world of Kubernetes and got me closer to where I wanted to be. Now, fast forward from that point in time, like a year and a half to 2 years later after that, here I am. I'm still blogging. I'm still doing stuff with Kubernetes. Like, I'm diving into things that are super interesting to me. I'm picking the thing apart and I'm sharing that with the tech communities. And an executive at this new company I was at, an executive saw that and an opportunity opened up. There was a container services lead who moved out of our region. And so there was a gap. And the executive knew that I was in that space doing stuff. And he's like, we see you have the knowledge. Would you be willing to step into this role and take on this plus one? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, this is what I want to do. And as soon as I did that, like, the floodgates opened, right? Sales folks were like, hey, I have a customer over here. I have a customer over there. I got a customer over here. They're asking about Kubernetes. They want to do Kubernetes. I had like staffing asking me, hey, can you get on this Kubernetes project? Like, it just took off. And none of that would have happened if I wouldn't have invested in myself when the previous company told me, no, we're not doing that, right? And so even now, you know, we talked about earlier in this podcast episode, what is my focus right now? I think Kubernetes is going to be abstracted away more and more from us, right? As time goes on, we could see this happening with the cloud providers. And so it's becoming just a part of the fabric. And so at some point in the future, I don't know how relevant like Kubernetes admin skills are going to be. And so the stuff that I'm working on is, yes, for now, but it's also for the future. And it's about not being tied to any technology, like being able to shift. In my career, I've had to shift several times and rebrand what it is I do and what I'm known for. And I'll probably have to do that several more times. And I'm okay with that. And I think that's a part of being in this space and also continuing to keep yourself valuable in the market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a perfect way to conclude this, because you know, it's something we've been talking about for a long time, is, you know, being part of emerging technology means that emerging technology eventually becomes commodity. That's just the way our industry is. It's technology, it's waves. You know, everyone figures out the technology. Everyone figures out how to, you know, is the technology useful? They maximize that and we move on to the next emerging technology wave, right? And so that's a fantastic way to think about this, is constantly, it's a combination of investing in yourself, but also helping others, you know, the rising tides floats all boats kind of analogy if you're giving back to the community. So that's a
I love that analogy. And also to add on to your point, you can do ML and AI on Kubernetes. So if you're a Kubernetes person, I mean, you could look at something like Kubeflow, right? You know, AI is super hot right now. It's like on fire. Kubernetes is hot too. Maybe you're a Kubernetes person and you want to kind of look to the next thing. You can combine the two, right? So
I love that. So I'm going to close it out there. So Steve, tell everyone real quick, like, what are some resources, or if they want to, are you going to be at any upcoming events, or they want to follow you or reach out to you? How can everyone find out more?
Yeah. So, all of my like social handles are, Bukatech. My blog is bukatech.com. So basically you can search on that and you'll find me. You can stay updated on what I'm doing through my, my blog. I'm always doing podcasts, doing like webinars and different things. I'm speaking at MMS in May. I'm also speaking at Experts Live Europe coming up in the fall. And so check out those sites. And I'm always speaking at user groups and stuff like that too. So just stay up to date with me at bukatech.com and at bukatech on Twitter as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Steve, and I certainly appreciate it. And for everyone out there, thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. And if you can leave a review wherever you get your podcast, please consider leaving a review as well. And we're always interested in feedback, how to give feedback, and also all the links to Steve's content will be in the show notes for this episode. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.